All right, welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 111. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
We got a lot to talk about tonight. We have Oscars, we have Bill Paxton, we have some new movies, some older movies. Hopefully we'll be able to get to most of it. But we're going to start off with Get Out, the directorial debut from Jordan Peele, which is a kind of slow burn horror movie. Which kind of, you know, would not be what you expect if you know who Jordan Peele is, but yeah. So it's about a black guy who's dating a white girl, and the time has come to go meet her family. And as soon as he gets to her family's house, or even before then, things start to take weird turns. Chris, what did you think of this movie, man?
I like it.
Yeah.
It's a pretty cool premise, right? Like,
it's a great premise.
Interracial couple goes back to meet white parents, older white parents, up in the boonies at that. Like, and things go weird, like, pretty much from the start. Like, and Chris, he's the main character. He kind of, like, early on, he's like, hey, like, to his girlfriend, like, you told them, like, that I'm black? And as we'll come to see, that's not really an issue, but she doesn't. Like, she hadn't done that quite yet, and he's like, things can get weird then, and things get weird. Like, and yeah. It takes a little while to kind of piece the shit together, like...
Yeah, you know something is off right away. Yeah. But a lot of it is stuff that, like, I'm sure black people go through all the time. You know what I mean? That's the brilliant conceit of this movie is it's showing you what it's like.
You don't really realize
feel like the outsider.
Sinister everything is behind it because it is just kind of this is like how a lot of black people are treated around white people, unfairly so, but. Like, it's kind of – it plays off of that normalization of this casual racism
yeah.
to a point where, it makes you uncomfortable watching it, but you're also like, all right, like, this is just a little weird. But you know it's weirder than that because the way the movie starts out with is the kidnapping.
A wonderful opening scene where a character we don't know, and he's a young black man walking around like the suburban neighborhood at night, and just right away you're like, first of all, it's just like a wonderfully shot scene with like great music in it, but just like right away you're like on edge, and all he's doing is walking around like a neighborhood that I would feel fine walking around. I don't know, right. This movie I think is, it's like a very smart kind of classical horror movie, but what I really love about it is its willingness to talk about race relations in a way that feels new, that feels like it's addressing like the post-Obama era. Like you mentioned it, the casual racism.
Yeah.
That is, I guess, probably the best term for it. I was going to say like a softer, gentler racism, like unintentional almost.
It's like that. That's what it is. They don't really realize that they're being racist.
They think they're being nice.
Right.
They're like going out of their way and making great effort to be nice to this guy, but all they're doing is making him feel incredibly uncomfortable.
More and more uncomfortable the entire time.
I think that's honestly like my favorite thing about this movie. It's just the way it tackles that stuff. And especially when like, they have like this kind of family gathering like slash party thing there. And the things that people say to him are just... It's unbelievable, but...
Oh, yeah, it's great.
The movie, I mean, maybe not as much, but I kind of got this out of it as well, is, like, it kind of shows how, like, white people can feel, too, trying to talk to a black person where, like, you have, like, this stupid inclination to, like, try to be cool or something. Like,
right,
or, I'm one of the cool people, man. I'm not judging you. But it really just – then you see how that makes the person feel that you're talking to like that. don't know. I think this is a movie that, I don't know, it could be one of the best movies of the year. When it all comes down, you know, we're only in February, but he did a great job for a first movie, and especially doing a genre that you would think would be outside of his comfort zone. I really liked it.
Yeah, there is. He does pepper it with a little bit of horror. Like, people are calling it a horror comedy. I don't really see that.
I would call it a straight horror movie.
Yeah, there are aspects of comedy, and there's one scene that actually I liked the scene, but it felt a little out of place.
Is it the police station?
Yeah.
It sticks out. Yeah,
it's funny, but. But it's also like everything else in the film is so serious, and then this comes along and it's like slapstick humor, and it's like, like this maybe works as like a skit, but not in this film, which I think did detract a little bit from it. Like, it's like a 5 minute scene in a movie that's like an hour and 40 minutes or so.
Yeah, and you know what? And don't get me wrong, I like this movie, but there are things about it. I think. If we have time to talk spoilers at the very end of this episode, we will, but I'll try to talk around it. But I do think that the movie kind of pulls punches a little bit. Like, at least for me, for horror movies, I want them to go to the most sinister, bleak ending possible. And this movie sets up a really bleak ending and then lets us all off the hook with, like...
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, like, you think one thing's going to happen, and it's, I think, would have been the stronger ending.
Well, especially because of the way there's a scene early on that sets...
Yeah, it's set up.
Seed for that, yeah.
It's absolutely... I mean, he is playing with us, and then when you see, like, oh, it's not what you think, I just feel like it feels too jokey and out of place. I would have gone for the bleak ending and make a strong political statement, which would have been, I think, in line with the rest of what the movie's trying to say. But for whatever reason, he lets us all off the hook and lets us all kind of just like laugh and have fun at the end. When I don't know, for me, I always want the dark ending when it comes to horror. So if we get a chance to talk about it, we will.
There are definitely things, spoiler talk, that we can't touch for right here. So maybe at the end we'll be able to touch on them.
Yeah, and so for the interest of time, we'll just Chris, your score, and we'll move on. And hopefully,
I am at a 4. It's right up there with Split for me.
Yeah,
early on this year, so
yeah, it's right up there with Split for me, but I'm giving it a 4 as well. And yeah, we'll talk about it more at the end of the episode if we have time. But another movie that is right up there with Split and Get Out for me, I don't know if this surprises you or not, is just came to Netflix. It's called I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore.
It's such a long title.
I love the title, and it perfectly sets up the central theme of what it's about. It's from Macon Blair, who is an actor who was in Blue Ruin and Green Room.
He's like he's best friends with
Jeremy Saulnier.
Yeah, the director of Green Room.
Yeah, and this is him writing and directing his first feature. He actually has a cameo in it early on. But yeah, this thing came out of nowhere, and I fucking love it. Like, I was trying to tell you, like, to you what I, like, you know, give my little pitch to you what I thought it was. It kind of, like I said, reminds me of that movie God Bless America, or yeah, that movie Super. Yeah, it reminds me a lot of those movies, but like kind of mixed with like a Coen Brothers movie or something. It's tonally kind of all over the place, which
yeah it is.
Like, I think it would be a problem. I think some people will knock the movie for that, but I just kind of enjoyed my time and just loved what the hell. Like, it made it more unpredictable for me, because I'm like, all right, where the hell is this going, dude? This is all over the place. I guess we should give like a little setup. What the story is: this girl gets robbed and she finds no help from the police, and so she decides to start trying like figure out who robbed her house on her own. And it's kind of like this thing like where she's fed up with everyone just being assholes and not nice to each other. And she ends up befriending what the hell is the actor's name?
Elijah Wood.
Elijah Wood. who is this oddball loner, and they kind of set out on a path towards like vigilante justice that, you know, is very funny throughout, but then takes very like increasingly violent as the movie goes on, and to the point where like by the end it's become a full-on just like thriller or something. Like, I don't know, it's really weird, but I love the hell out of it. Like, how did you like it, Chris?
I like it. I think that it is kind of all over the place tonally, and that detracts a little bit for it for me. It's a really weird movie.
It's super, yeah. If you were texting me while you're watching, like, what the fuck am I watching? I'm like, just wait and watch
right.
it.
It's like, I think I texted you after she had got her computer back, because she tracks down her computer on like the Find My Computer app or whatever on her phone, and she can't get the cops to go there, so she goes and does it on her own with this guy Tony, who brings a Morningstar
and some ninja stars,
and he's like trying to like spin this Morningstar around. He doesn't really know what he's doing, and he fucks up, and somehow like the guy that he's trying to swing it at ends up hitting himself in the face with it, stumbling backwards. He busts into the fucking room. He throws a ninja star at a wall and then lights a firecracker.
Oh yeah, dude. So I told you that I love that scene. Like, I was dying laughing at this scene when he throws the ninja star at the wall. So, and there's a lot of like little things in the movie like that. So I didn't rewatch the movie last night. I fast forwarded through it and watched certain parts again. And I had totally forgot that he threw the fucking firecracker.
Yeah, it's so funny. It's like he like stalls, and it's like everything stops. Everyone's staring at him, and he like takes that. He lights the firecracker, throws it into the corner.
I mean, that I even tweeted at Macon Blair, like, that scene just had me fucking dying. It's hilarious.
There are five scenes, I think, that are really, really great in this movie. It's that one where she gets the computer back. There's one where she accidentally hits this guy in the face with her. She's getting back her silver. She's tracked down her silver, and she accidentally hits him in the face, and then he breaks her finger. Just like reaches out and snaps her finger. And then there's three other scenes that involve this kind of family. And it increasingly gets more and more gory and violent each time. But it does take this weird dark turn in the last like maybe 15 minutes of the movie. It moves a little bit away from like the humor that kind of drives it at first. It felt a little tonally off there. Like all of a sudden it becomes this dark thing.
Like it's a weird thing. It's a hard balancing act. Like the Coen brothers get away with it all the time. Like I remember when I was younger watching Fargo for the first time, having that problem with that movie. And now I rewatch it and I'm like, this is a classic. So I don't know.
It might just be something that like you need to watch again. Like maybe if I watch it again, I'll turn on it a little more, because it's such a weird thing to watch that first time. It's like, what are they doing? Where are they going?
Yeah, and I don't know. I didn't get to hear your thoughts about like once the violence breaks out, like what you thought of all that. Like I was pretty like, it was like I'm watching Green Room. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's super violent. It's like super gory and well done. Like it makes.
Yeah.
And you almost don't expect it. Like,
no.
Because there's a scene with a shotgun, and it's this old shotgun. And it, to me, I'm like, all right, the humor in this is that this thing's going to backfire on her. Like, and it's all the things are going to go bad for like the bad guys, and like, because that's kind of how this movie's been going, and that's not where it goes at
no.
first.
Fucking crazy, like,
it just completely blows like a piece of this dude's body off, and it's like, holy fuck!
The shotgun explodes in half, and like, dude, these villains that kind of emerge in the last half hour of the movie are truly kind of scary, like especially the one guy, like when he tells another character, you know, buddy, you don't have a son anymore, is just absolutely sinister. Like, it's a great performance. It felt like it came out of another movie, though.
Yeah, but, it's so weird. But, like, the scene with that, the son dying, is just fucking hysterical.
Like, that's when the movie turns, though. Like, that's when you're like, whoa. And, like, the way, even before, like, how he ultimately gets murdered, but, like, before that, the way, I don't want to spoil it, but, like, that's a terrifying way to go.
Oh, yeah. It's just so, like, it's like this accident, like, the way it all plays out.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
It's just, like, this reaction. And then it's just, like, the absurdity of the actions that he takes from that point.
Yeah,
all the way up until when he dies. It's
a wild movie, dude.
But I think, like, for me, the movie is like those five scenes, which are all kind of like the actiony scenes, I guess. And the rest of it, I was like, this is a little like there's like a weird dance scene going on.
I actually really really admired it. And I actually really liked the very ending, which I'll try to say without spoiling, but just the way she's sitting there and she's hearing someone talk about a burger, and you just kind of tell, like the impression I got is she's like, I have to deal with this for the rest of my life. Like, that's the look I got on her face. I mean, you could read that scene multiple different ways, but that's kind of how I read it. And it was just like, I thought it was like a wonderful final shot, and I don't know, just like the whole movie won me over. Like, it's not perfect, and like we've said, it's totally kind of nut so, but I kind of love it for that. Dude, I was inclined at first to give this 5 stars. That's how much I enjoyed it. I'm going to go with 4, but it's a very high recommend, and it's on Netflix. So,
yeah, it's a Netflix. I think it's like one of their exclusive movies or whatever that they picked up. So,
yeah.
I'm gonna go 3. I do think it's fun. Like, it's definitely worth watching. I think one of its strengths is Melanie Lynskey, who's the main character in it. She's kind of like the depressed person. I think she's really strong in this movie. Like, a lot of charisma.
I love the sentiments too. Like the main her like main thing in this movie is like, why are people such assholes to each other? There's a part. There's a part where, like, a bad guy is saying to her, like, what do you want? What's your angle? Like, you know, you want money? You want this and that? She goes, I just want people to not be assholes. And I love that.
Yeah, it's a great line. And the other thing about it is, like, generally, like, a lot of these movies will place, like, this like, women that are a different type of body type. Like, she's a very normal looking. Like, I think she has a really cute face, but she's normal looking. Like,
yeah, she does. She looks like Mary Elizabeth Winstead or something, but not as perfect. So, like, right. I don't know. Yeah. Like, that's kind of like,
yeah. Like, she's, and in this, like, they play up like the frumpiness, like,
yeah, for sure.
Like, so I think that works really well, and she's just this normal person who's like had fucking enough.
I also love the Macon Blair cameo where he spoils Lord of the Rings for her, or whatever book she's reading.
Yeah, the book she's reading.
And the movie never explains to you that she's upset about that. It's just like, you're thinking to yourself, what a dick. Like, why did that guy do that? I don't know.
Well, I think it does, like, later on, because
it does, kind of, in a roundabout way.
Tony's reading the same book, and he's like, don't spoil it for me.
Yeah.
I hate when people do that. And she's like, yeah, I know.
I loved Elijah Wood in this too. Like, I don't know. I could see people having problems with it. I totally get you coming in at 3, but like, I fully expect this to be on my top 10.
It's certainly worth a watch.
Yeah. All right. So those are two really good movies that you could either stay home or go out and see right now. But we do have a little bit of, well, kind of a big chunk of movie stuff to talk about, like, general.
Yeah.
The Oscars happened this last weekend. I guess before we really get to that, on the same day we found out that Bill Paxton died, which is a bummer, man.
Yeah.
I know he's not like a major superstar like a lot of people we've lost in the last year or so, but I was a huge fan of his. I don't know about you, but
I mean, he's one of those kind of underappreciated guys. Like he's a lot in a lot of supporting roles, and but yeah, like you can look through, like, I mean, just like if you look at his IMDb page, like he's known for being in Titanic, Apollo 13, Aliens, Edge of Tomorrow. Yeah. Like, and those are just the four they have at the top. Like, he's been in so many other movies. That's rough. And he's, what, 61? He actually just started a TV show this year. Like,
he looked young and healthy, and it was like an accidental death, kind of. He died from complications during surgery. He had a stroke, I think. So, you know, completely out of the blue. He had no idea it was coming. I guess nobody has any idea it's coming for the most part. Yeah, it sucks. But, like, I don't know. I think if you're someone who is your eyes age, like, I mean, if you grew up in the 80s, like, this guy, dude, he was in fucking Aliens. He was in Terminator. Yeah,
I saw the news, and I'm, like, sitting there going, I mean, I hope people don't make the Game Over, Man, Game Over.
Oh, of course they did, yeah.
And, like, the first thing I see is Stephen King, like, kind of, and he, like, praises him, but at the end, he's like,
Game over.
I'm like,
I mean, a lot of people remember him from that role.
Yeah.
I just want to highlight two things from him. One, he did a horror movie in early 2000s called Frailty. It was his directorial debut. That movie's pretty great. It's like underappreciated and not a lot of people talk about it or even know about it. So if you like horror, check out Frailty. He also starred in one of my top three or four movies of all time, which is A Simple Plan. If you haven't seen A Simple Plan, I mean, it's a great thriller about some guys who find some money in the woods and they try to hang on to it. And not only, like, he's great in it. He's like our main character. He's the normal guy who slowly gets corrupted by this money and turns evil. And if you want to see a wonderful performance, I mean, he's great. His brother is played by Billy Bob Thornton in it. And that is also like a career performance from Billy Bob Thornton. Just incredible. Chris, have you seen A Simple Plan?
I believe so.
I haven't seen it
recently, but yeah.
It's in my top five, like, for sure. So that was a huge blow when I found that out. But I just wanted to, like, throw out there, if you have not seen those movies, check them out. They're both pretty great. Anything you wanted to add about Bill Paxton?
No, I mean, it's just after all the losses we had last year of kind of like the stars we had grown up with, that it just seems to be continuing, and I guess it's going to. it's just, unfortunately, that, you know, that time.
We're reaching middle age. Sucks.
Though Bill Paxton wasn't, like, he was only about 20 years older than us, so.
Yeah.
20, 25 years older, like, so you don't expect that one quite yet, but
no, not at all.
Yeah.
All right, so on to happier news, I suppose. So the Oscars happened, and did you watch them, Chris?
I did not.
Wow.
I did. I know all about some insanity. Nonsense, so.
Yeah. All right. We're gonna start off with the biggest thing about it is, well, first off, Moonlight won Best Picture. Which was a surprise. Most people were expecting La La Land. What made it even fucking crazier by a millionfold is, live during the ceremony, it was announced that La La Land won Best Picture, and it was a total mix-up. Warren Beatty was handed the wrong card. He was handed the card for Emma Stone's Best Actress win, which says Moonlight on it, and we could probably do a whole podcast on the details of that, but it was a total mix up. And I think it was like, while it made for like fun water cooler talk and all that, I think it was a really unfortunate moment for both the people who made La La Land. It puts them in a bad position, and the people who made Moonlight, it puts them in a bad position. And it kind of took away from, I thought, like, Moonlight's win a little bit. Which, and I'm someone who, I did not want Moonlight to win. I was in La La Land's camp, But
yeah, but you don't ever want to
it's not fair.
The group that wins, like, both of them are forever going to be interlocked now as Moonlight, the winner that La La Land was announced first. Like, they don't have that chance to celebrate it just as their win. It's always going to be those La La Land guys are up there giving their speeches.
And then gave speeches. Yeah. It's just an unbelievable fuck up that just, at the very least, was handled with grace by everyone involved. Like, I have to give it to La La Land's producer. I want to say his name is Andy Horowitz. He, like, as soon as he realized what was going on, he took control of the situation and he got on the mic. He's like, no, there's been a mistake. Moonlight, you are best picture. And then he went and turned and snatched the card out of Warren Beatty's hand and held it up for the cameras and the crowd to show them. He's like, come on up, guys. You guys are the winner. That was a classy move by him, I think. And I think, even Barry Jenkins, the director of Moonlight, made like a conciliatory statement towards La La Land. Like, they handled it well, but like,
yeah, it's just
too bad. Yeah, it's too bad because while I did not love Moonlight, like, both Moonlight and La La Land are worthy movies to be up for that award, and to have that happen to them is shitty. Have you seen Moonlight yet?
I have not. It just came out this week on at Redbox, and I just did not get a chance to go get it. So
yeah, I know I sounded a little down on it last week, but like I said, I think I gave it 4 stars, so I wasn't like shitting on it. And it was funny, as we were watching, my girlfriend, she's like, I think Moonlight deserved it more too. So maybe I'm in the minority. I obviously, among Academy voters, I was, but I just thought that La La Land was a fun movie that I will rewatch, whereas Moonlight was extremely well made, but I probably will never watch it again.
Right.
I also thought that, like, La La Land had an incredible ending, and Moonlight, like, while it's so well made throughout, doesn't have much of an ending at all. So that's just kind of where I fell on it. Good for Moonlight, good for them.
Yeah.
I wanted to see La La Land take it, but, oh well, I still get to watch La La Land whenever I want.
Yeah, it doesn't take, like, for us as movie fans, like, it doesn't really affect us in any way. Like, La La Land is still there, Moonlight's still there. 10 years from now, we'll be able to watch either one if we want, and it doesn't really matter who won.
Yeah, yeah. I will say, though, there's another part of this that I really don't like and I don't understand, which is a lot of people had a lot of hatred towards La La Land.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I think some of the people that are so against it have not even seen it. You get these really weird political, like, rants about the movie where it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit to me.
It seems very, like, one, because I think if you had seen it, like, you would kind of realize that it's not necessarily.
It's much to do about nothing. Like, there's right. This movie, La La Land, has no political message to it. And there's people who are like, well, it's a white savior movie because it's about how.
It's not, though. Like, that was something. I don't know if you've read the same article. Like, that, yeah, about white guys saving jazz. But
that's not what it's about at all.
Like, in fact, if you want to read deep into it, it's about a white guy who's trapped in the past of the music that he loves, and a black guy who is trying to advance that genre. Thank you, Chris.
It's almost as if you've seen the movie.
Right?
Yeah, because, dude, I got in an argument with one of our fellow podcasters, Peter, and Isabella, like, some people I talked to on Twitter, and, like, they're trying to throw this at me, and I'm like, dude, if anything, the black dude schools him about how he doesn't fucking get it, you know? Like,
right.
And he doesn't save jazz, and he's not trying to save jazz. All he's trying to do, or the only thing is that he wishes more people were into jazz, and I don't think black people have ownership over that. Like, there's nothing in it's like a light, harmless movie about people falling in love, and it has nothing to say about any of that, and it doesn't even say anything accidentally about any of that. It's just not there. I'm sorry. And sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. There's nothing fucking there. It's too bad because it's a good movie. It's worth watching. You shouldn't shit on it and accept what this stupid article says. The article's wrong. Sorry, it's just not there.
Yeah, this is. I don't get that approach to it. Like, I get that the movie is not very diverse necessarily, but not every movie is going to be. And coming off of 2 years of Oscar so white, that does, you know, kind of ring a little bit, especially when this movie is kind of a celebration of old Hollywood. But not in the way that people seem to be approaching it, though.
People are applying their politics to right. a movie that doesn't have anything to say about it. And it's not like a movie like You've Got Mail, where if you think it has nothing political to say, but if you watch You've Got Mail closely, it's incredibly racist and stuff like that. But like, this movie's not. There's nothing racist in it. Not even unintentional. It's just right. not there. My little rant on that. I don't know if you had more to say.
No, I mean, I did not watch the awards, and I honestly did not see. I think I've only seen one, two. I've seen like four of the Best Picture nominees. I'm probably going to see a few more.
I've seen most of them at this point. We have many other categories to go over. So if you're ready for that,
we can hit up some of the other ones.
All right, Best Animated Film went to Zootopia. I've not seen all of them. You've probably seen more of them than me.
I saw Moana and Kubo, and I would pick Zootopia over.
Really?
Overdose. Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard some people saying like Moana got robbed, but I think that for me, out of the ones I've seen, it was an easy choice, and I think that Zootopia speaks to the year in which it came out.
I also do think like people look up. I don't really want to touch on race too much here, but people like look at Moana and go, oh, well, it was, you know, a Disney movie that starred an all ethnic cast. Like, but Zootopia was literally about racism.
Except I said, it fits the year it came out.
Except people like don't want to look at it as that because they're animals. But like the messaging is that like, it's literally about racism and sexism. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I think the Zootopia was a very good choice, and yeah, that's about all I have to say about that. Best documentary went to OJ Made in America,
mm-hmm.
which you have not seen, have you?
No.
I've talked about it on this show.
Yeah, that's the 8-hour one?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's 476 minutes. I thought it was great. It was a fantastic, you know, work, but one, it's not a movie. It's an eight part documentary series. Yeah. TV show. And I was personally pulling for, Ava DuVernay's 13th, which accomplishes more than OJ Made in America. And it does it in 100 minutes. It's very concise. I think it's kind of a shame. I thought like I said, I think OJ Made in America is great, but 13th, I think, is more important. It says more. It does more. There's a few I didn't see in this category, but like I was really pulling for 13th, so I was disappointed.
I do wonder if OJ gets some votes. One, because it's OJ Simpson, right? And he was at one point part of that Hollywood group.
He's probably was at the Oscars and shit when we were little, you know?
Right. So yeah. I do wonder if like more people were like, oh no, this is like more, you know, this is more relatable for us as opposed to 13th, which is probably more meaningful.
I think more people saw OJ Made in America.
Yeah.
I think it comes down to that. Like the 13th is very accessible as well. Cause it was picked up by Netflix. So that's where you could watch it. But, OJ was on TV, and also, yeah, like, people are just interested in that OJ story still.
Yeah.
So, it's great. I would say it's worth watching, Chris, but I would say watch the 13th first. But, yeah, that category kind of disappointed me. But there were others as well, but keep moving along. Best actress, Emma Stone.
No surprise there, right? Like,
it was no surprise. I don't think it was a strong category this year. I don't, you know, and I'm fine with it because I really like her. So
yeah,
like I want to marry her. So totally fine with that. Best actor went to Casey Affleck.
Which you had said you had thought that was where that was going to go.
Yeah, I Well, I was a little worried because there's allegations against him about sexual assault or whatever.
Yeah, but back in 2010, which
I don't really know about the. I've
read up on it because I guess they were trying to draw comparisons to this other guy who basically got locked out of the Oscars. He was director of a movie.
Birth of a Nation.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this one piece that I read kind of explained where the two went to. Basically, Casey Affleck is an asshole.
I guess I never let that factor into how I like something, though. At least I try not to.
I mean, you'll see. I guess if we're going to talk about Hacksaw Ridge in a little bit, but a lot of hate for Mel Gibson as well.
yeah, which at some point with that, and if I'm being totally honest, like, dude, it's been a long time. Give the guy another chance, I guess. But I know some people are really against that.
Yes, like you don't have to give him another chance. But the reality is he's still making art.
Yeah,
and he's still and he's part of the Academy. He is eligible for these roles, and if he makes art that is worthwhile to be celebrated, that's what this is for. As personal, personally, we don't have to celebrate that. Like, if you don't like Casey Affleck, you think he's an asshole, don't support his movies, don't watch his stuff, don't watch Mel Gibson shit. But the Academy has every right and it's actually their responsibility to vote for the stuff that they feel is the best of the year.
Yeah, and it's like I always go back to Tom Cruise as my example on this. It's like I don't agree with Scientology whatsoever, but I like Tom Cruise as an actor. What can I say? Sorry. Like,
right.
When you're watching a movie, you're not endorsing the people that made it. You're just watching a work of art and saying, do I like this or not? Like,
right. And if you feel you're endorsing it and you don't want to, then don't watch it. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. But as for, I think he deserved it, dude. I think he gave an incredible performance in that movie, and that movie I think was one of the year's best. You finally saw it this week, so
yeah.
You think it was a deserved win for him on that, or
I mean, yeah, I have not seen Fences. I've seen the other four that he was up against, and I would say yeah.
I haven't seen Fences either, but I feel like Denzel has won already, and I don't know. To me, Fences does not sound amazing. Like, I'm interested to see it, but it does sound like it feels like a play, which always kind of bugs me.
Right.
Best supporting actress was Viola Davis for Fences.
Mm-hmm.
This one, I think, pissed me off more than anything. In my opinion, a supporting role should be judged by the impact that it has on a film versus how much time the character is in the movie, and no one deserves that more, in my opinion, than Michelle Williams. I think she was crucial to Manchester by the Sea, and she breaks your heart in that movie.
Yeah, she's in it for very, very little bit, maybe 2 minutes total, but there is one scene where she basically gives a monologue at Casey Affleck's character, and it's gut-wrenching. Like, it is just pure emotion all the way through, and you see where everything, all the actions that Casey Affleck has taken up to that point have gotten him here, and why he is so self-destructive and unwilling to kind of embrace other things because of that. And she's trying to forgive him.
Like, yeah,
and he can't. He can't even accept that.
Yeah, he can't. Like, he has a great,
because he can't forgive himself.
He has a great line in the movie. I don't want to spoil what it's about or anything, but I think it's like the key to the whole movie is he says, "I can't beat it." That thought was incredible. But yeah, she's so fucking good in it, and she's only on screen for like 5-10 minutes. That's a best supporting actor role, like. Viola Davis was one of the leads in Fences, and she threw her name in the hat for best supporting actress because she thought she had a better shot of winning there. Which is like, I feel like it's cheating or whatever, because you're like, yeah, you have a better shot there because you're in more of the movie and people are going to be more in, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's
just, yeah, because like when it comes down to it, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, like,
she was amazing in that.
She was, she did a ton of acting, but yeah, I'm totally with you. It's way more important to for a supporting actor or actress to hit their mark in that small bit they're given.
Yeah, so, and I think it really should have went to her. I mean, she was just like, it felt real, dude. Like, it felt like you were watching something you shouldn't be watching. That was something private between two people. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's what was great about it. That movie is a fucking downer.
Yes, it
like
is.
Just talking about the movie gets me like almost choked up. And in fact, that scene where she runs into him on the street, I think that was right around when my girlfriend was like, how much longer is this movie? I can't really take this anymore. All right, so best supporting actor went to Mahershala Ali for
Moonlight.
Yeah. I love this actor. I fucking love him in House of Cards. I don't know if you ever watched that show.
Not yet.
He's like an advisor. Like, he's like one of the behind the scene guys on it. Okay. And like, he's just so good in it. He's also incredible in Moonlight. And in Moonlight, he's in it for only the first third of the movie. But like the note that he like leaves that movie on is just perfect. It's like this dinner table conversation between him and the main character, who at that point is like 8 years old or something. And it's a heartbreaking scene. I think that's earned. I think that this guy, he's great in everything. And so it's great to finally see him get recognized. He was in a couple things last year, but yeah, I don't know if you've noticed him and stuff, but he's a really good actor.
It sounds like it. I mean, he could say he's an Academy Award winning actor now, so.
Yeah. One or two others I want to touch on. Best director went to Damien Chazelle for La La Land. Like I said, I was pulling for La La Land, so cool.
Right.
But if I'm being honest, the way I saw this all going was Barry Jenkins gets best director and La La Land best. Most people had it the other way, but I think that you got to see Moonlight, Chris, just for Barry Jenkins' direction. Like, he's just doing all sorts of weird things. Like, he, like, there's like, just little things. Like, he puts a camera on, what the fuck you call it? The windows on the outside of your car.
Like a windshield?
No, the window. The mirror. Rear view mirror.
Okay.
Like, there's a part where he, like, places a camera on a rear view mirror and keeps it there as a door opens and closes to a car. Like, there's, like, tons of little touches like that in Moonlight. Like, he's really doing interesting stuff with camera work, the cinematography, like, the color and everything. Fucking incredible. So, like, I would have gave it, honestly, to Barry Jenkins for Best Director. But, of course, I'm not upset about Damien Chazelle winning. Like, I think he should have won for fucking Whiplash years ago. So, cool. The other one, the last one I really want to make sure we touched on was Best Original Screenplay. Went to Manchester by the Sea, which was written by the director Kenneth Lonergan. Mm-hmm. I'm totally down with that. I don't know if you had any feelings about it, but I kind of wanted it to win that one.
Like, I could see that, especially over La La Land, and I haven't seen Hell or High Water, but. Like, those seem to be really the competition it was up against. So,
and they're not like script heavy movies. You know what right. I mean? Like, they were like dialogue heavy at the very least. Like,
right.
Although no, Hell or High Water has incredible dialogue, but it's just, I don't know. I thought the writing in Manchester was phenomenal. Those are the ones I really wanted to touch on. There's some other like really interesting wins from early on in the less exciting categories, like Hacksaw Ridge, I think, won best
sound mixing.
Sound mixing. Just kind of random, but sure. Okay, like, I don't know. Those aren't categories I really look at. So I don't know if there's anything other that you wanted to touch on.
Well, briefly, I did see after the Oscars, best documentary short subject went to The White Helmets, which I watched.
I just added it. So Tuesday. How was it?
And my experience with, I'm not like huge into documentaries. I require like a certain amount of storytelling or something in that documentary. And this is completely foreign language too. It's all in Arabic and Turkish.
It's only like 40 minutes.
Yeah, it's 40 minutes long. I found it a little hard to watch. Not because of the subject matter, just I did not find it very cohesive for me. But I could definitely. It's, you know, if you're going to honor stuff in the short subject area of stuff that definitely has meaning. I would assume like this, most of it takes place in Aleppo. It talks about like the rescue workers there in Syria. So, I could see where maybe somebody would get behind it and really like it and why they voted for it. I just was not super impressed by it. So,
you know, some of those smaller categories, I think that sometimes people just look at what it's about. It's like they might have not seen it.
What is The White Helmets about? Oh, it's about Aleppo. That's important. I don't know. Like, I haven't seen the other four, so maybe it is the best one in there, but I was not super like impressed by it.
Yeah. So that's the Oscars. I mean, outside of a few things that really pissed me off, I think that it was a really strong group of movies this year. I mean, they're all worth watching, at least the ones I've seen. So,
yeah. One more thing on the Oscars. I just kind of want to get your opinion on it. Sure. I saw people flipping their lid over the fact that Suicide Squad is now an Oscar-winning movie.
I was one of those people. I was like, what the fuck?
Right, but I mean, it was up against, that category is kind of iffy to begin with, but there was only three movies in that category.
Well, that's a problem. There should have been more. Why? Look at the makeup work that they did in Star Trek versus that. Like, it's way more impressive.
If we're talking pure impressiveness
of the makeup, like,
I don't disagree. But I also like, there's always a movie like this. Like, when you like look at, I think Michael Bay movies that aren't The Rock have gotten Oscar wins for like the specialty awards. Like, people going crazy over this is kind of nuts.
I get that. That's fine. But like, I think the makeup sucked in it. Like, dude,
which is fine. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think Star Trek had better makeup for sure.
Look at the Joker in that movie. I think that like the choices they made were terrible. Like, is that stupid tattoos on his forehead and shit? Come on, dude. Like, and it's simple makeup. It's like putting white makeup on somebody and versus like Star Trek is like super intricate shit that they're doing. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
No, you know what else pissed me off? Best costume design. That's a Fantastic Beast. And I was like, how did that not?
Just a fucking period movie.
Yeah. Like, it should have went to La La Land, in my opinion. Like, I thought, like, I actually noticed the clothing in La La Land. I was like, oh, look at like the bright dresses and stuff. Like,
right.
And that was a good movie. Like, I don't know.
Fantastic Beasts was not a good movie. So.
But having seen Hacksaw Ridge, and I guess we'll transition off of the Oscars, I'm totally fine with Hacksaw Ridge winning some shit because that movie's fucking pretty cool, pretty fun.
I liked it. It's a little corny.
Yeah, really corny. To the point where I almost didn't believe it until at the very end it reveals, no, this is actually true. I'm like, wow.
Yeah. Like it is kind of at points it gets a little goofy, where you're just like, this is absurd.
Well, here's my problem, and even if it's true, here's my problem. Dude's an idiot. I'm sorry. You can be. Honestly, dude, you couldn't drag me to war. I would have ran away. I'll admit it right up. I'm be a coward about it. But to go into war with that type of thinking, okay, that's fine. You want to be a medic? That's fine. But get the fucking rifle training and carry a gun on you in case you need it, bro. Like, it doesn't make you a hero. It makes you stupid. And I kept saying that the whole movie. But then you find out at the end, like, this stuff really actually did happen. I'm just like, well, Congrats, dude. Props to you, but
you
like,
somehow cheated death.
You're still stupid,
right?
But cool, like you're a good guy. So Hacksaw Ridge is about a guy who's a conscientious objector who signs up for World War II anyways because he doesn't want to sit on the sidelines. He goes to war but refuses to like learn how to fight whatsoever, and somehow gets through that and actually comes out a hero on the other end after going through like this unbelievably brutal battle on Hacksaw Ridge. Dude, this movie, like, once it gets going, I hate to, like, look at something that's a true story that's about war and just revel in the violence, but the director did, so why the hell should I not? Like,
oh, yeah. This is, and Mel Gibson does this in most of his movies that he directs.
Yeah.
He really does in the gore and the visceralness of war.
Which is funny because this is a movie about a guy who like is super against violence, but I don't know, dude. Despite the fact that the whole time I'm saying it's corny and this guy's an idiot, I found Hacksaw Ridge to be massively entertaining. Like I was totally entertained throughout, even in the slow parts in the beginning. I found like the stuff with his dad entertaining, and like the way it sets up his character growing up as a little kid and why he might be against violence, I thought was entertaining.
Right.
And then once it gets going, like I said, I feel like it's wrong for me to look at this way. But if you watch it as just an action movie, holy fuck, does it deliver the goods. Like,
yeah,
it is like an hour of nonstop carnage at the end. And like just like a dude finds a body that's been cut in fucking half. He picks up the body and uses it as a shield as he runs towards a bunker and is shooting at it. Like, just insanity, dude.
Yeah, so I don't remember exactly when Saving Private Ryan came out. It was about 20 years ago now, though.
Yeah.
I went to go see that with my wife, and she got up and walked out during the beach scene
at the beginning.
Yeah.
Did she leave? Like,
yeah, well, she went out. We were dating at the time, and she just went and stood outside
and waited for the bullets to stop.
Yeah, she's like, I can't be in there. And at the time, that was a pretty gruesome like scene.
It was groundbreaking.
This fucking blows it away.
Did you watch this one with her?
No. I knew like going in, like there's no way. This is no, like this makes that look like child's play. Like,
yeah, it's insane. It's
brutal.
You texted me, like, it was so funny. You texted me, Hacksaw Ridge is brutal, and I'm sitting there watching it right as you texted me. I'm like, yeah, he just got the basic training. You're like, wait till it gets to Japan. And you were not lying, dude.
Like, oh, my God.
There's like brief pauses in the second half, but honestly, for most of the second hour of that movie, it's just pure violence. And
yeah.
Like, if you could set aside your thoughts on whether we should be having like pornographic violence and
right.
And a true story about war and about how war is bad, and just watch it as an entertaining war, like an entertaining action movie. I thought it was a blast, dude. I was thoroughly entertained by Hacksaw Ridge.
Yes, totally agree.
Despite the fact that I wanted to just strangle the fucking main character, like, and his stupid face, like, for whatever reason, I just think that dude has a dumb face.
Yeah, Andrew Garfield does have like a goof, like, which is maybe the perfect thing for this movie, because
no, I mean, I think he was pretty well cast, because like, he's got the face of like a 12-year-old, even though he's like fucking our age, and he's got this is like aw shucks sensibility about him, which is like perfect for this character.
Yeah.
I mean, you could get into some of the statements in it and kind of like how they claim to be Jesus in it and stuff. But like, dude, if you just turn your brain off and just enjoy it as a piece of entertainment, like it's a fun fucking movie. That's one I could easily recommend to a lot of my friends who don't give a shit about Oscar movies, where I'm like, no, dude, you need to see Hacksaw Ridge. That shit is fucking crazy.
Totally agree. It's a very entertaining. I could see why, from a technical standpoint, at the very least, why it was nominated for Best Picture. And I, for me, as an entertaining movie, I thought it's like, I have no problem with it being there.
I'm gonna go 4 stars on it. But,
yep, that's where I'm at.
Like, definitely rent this if you want to see dudes' heads explode.
Certainly,
you get plenty. Dude, I'm just trying to like it, there's so much in there that you almost need a second watch to catch some of it. Like, there's a part where a dude puts like a fucking guy on top of a, like, he forces a guy on top of a grenade in order to save other people.
Yep.
There's like little things, dude. There's a part where like a bomb or some shit goes off, and it's a blink and you miss it thing. I don't know if you noticed, but like a dude's foot flies towards the camera. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I don't know if I caught that.
It really is a blink and you miss it. Like, his fucking like foot with the shoe on it flies at the camera, and you can see it for half a second as it flies by. Just, I mean, dude, and it makes me really excited that Mel Gibson might be getting more work and might do Suicide Squad 2. Like, oh my god, dude. Like, unleash that guy. Give it an R rating.
Yeah, just let him go to town.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, I know people have problems with Mel Gibson. I totally understand. But he can direct the movie. He's got a certain – it's like a very kind of – his movies all kind of feel like epics.
And like, what's crazy about this is, like, this is one of the most brutal war movies I think I've ever seen.
Easily.
He did it on a $40 million budget.
It doesn't – I mean, it looks like it's way more expensive.
That's a right. Like, that is a low budget for a movie. Like, especially one of this scope. Like, that's nuts.
Yeah, I mean, it's an epic, and it's for $40 million. And, like, dude, you have, like, battleships and shit in it, like, shooting off. Like I don't know how you did that for $40 million, but awesome.
Right, yeah. Amazing. So – yeah, it's definitely worth a watch.
Did we have anything else we need to touch on?
I mean, we briefly touched on Manchester when we were talking about Oscars. I saw that. Well,
if you have more to say about it, I'd love to hear it, because I was waiting for your
response. Not really. I mean, it just that Michelle Williams scene we talked about is really – it's such a strong moment in that movie. And it is a depressing film.
Yeah, what did you think about the part in the middle where it's almost like a silent film and you find out what really makes this guy tick and why he is the way he is? Like,
it's, and I can see, like, I don't really, like, it's hard to relate, right? Because, like, you don't know how you would react until you come across that, but I could definitely see myself, like, in that same sort of state.
Reaching for the gun.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, but your life's over. Like,
yeah. And
you can't come back from that.
And it's from your own innocent stupidity. Like, it's right. Just, he was having a fun night with friends, doing some blow, drinking a couple beers, and his life fell apart.
That shit. Like, I have done that type of shit in, like, I have gotten wasted in my house.
Yeah exactly.
And my kids are upstairs in their bedroom, and like, man, like, just thinking, like, oh, maybe I'm gonna walk to the, you know, the corner store or something, which would be really hard for me now. But like, if I were to, like, I'm gonna go do that, but first I'm gonna make this pot of coffee, but I'm an idiot and put paper towels on it instead of the coffee pot. Like, like, shit like that can happen though, because you're so fucking out of it that.
And it's not because, at least the way I read the movie, it's not because he's a bad person. He's a normal person.
No, no,
yeah.
Like, he loved his wife. Like, he loved his kids. It's heartbreaking.
Even in that scene, I don't know if you remember me telling you, like, in that scene, there was a thing I laughed at, which is them trying to get the stretcher into the ambulance. I was just like, like, it had, like, that's what I love about the movie, is it did have laughs, despite the fact that it was, like, ultra depressing.
There were definitely, like, moments of levity and, like, just like weird moments, like, because, like, you can't really relate to him because he's kind of unrelatable in the state he's in. But there's this one scene where he's kind of been convinced by his nephew to talk with his girlfriend's mom.
And he's, and just, you can tell he's just, heart's not in it. He's
just, yeah, it's just this awkward moment though of, like, him sitting there and her trying to, like, pull shit out of him. It's like, I've totally been in a situation like that. Like,
you're just not in the mood.
Yeah, it's like, or like I don't,
or on the other end of
what,
it,
I don't know what to say to you. So yeah. Like, yeah, it's like there were definitely moments of levity in it, but it, man, it is brutally depressing. So
it is, but I think it is a really well made film, like writing, directing, everything. It doesn't have a super strong ending, but I did appreciate that it didn't give us a way out. Like, it was like, no, this is the life that these people have to live, and it's not going to be okay, maybe, but right. It'll be as okay as it is. Like, that's, I admire it for that, because the obvious, like, easy ending is, oh, they live together, and like they give each other strength, but it doesn't go that way. I don't know. I really, really like Manchester. Like, yeah, I'm not really upset I bought it. I'm not upset I bought it, but I don't see myself watching it very many times.
No, I certainly don't see myself going back to that anytime soon. So
it's a tough one. It's a good Christmas movie. Watch that one around Christmas.
Everybody sit around the campfire and we'll watch this.
Anything else that you saw this last week that you want to touch on before we go?
No. I'm not sure what I'll have seen for next week.
Logan.
I'm going to try.
I'm going to try as well. I have a certain game coming out that I really want to play, but I feel like I'd be wrong to not go see Logan.
I'm hearing really good things about that.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's not based on the fact that, like, I love X-Men, which I enjoy X-Men, but it's based on the fact that this movie's getting crazy reviews, so right. I really want to see it. I will have also seen, well, I have seen, but we'll save it for next time, Bad Santa 2.
Okay.
Train to Busan. And The Light Between Oceans.
All right.
Which I heard The Light Between Oceans is pretty up there on the depressing meter.
Oh.
You can just tell by that title. It sounds like something that would be depressing.
Is that the one with the lighthouse?
There's a lighthouse, I believe. And it's something about a kid Baby. That this couple yeah. finds. Yes. And they raise yes. it as their own. Yeah.
Yep. Nope. That I read the synopsis for that. I was like, nope, I'm out.
I've heard good things. Well, we'll see.
Yep.
So those are the only ones I can guarantee.
We'll definitely have some stuff to talk about next week, though. So,
yeah.
All right. Guess we'll be back.
Movie dudes.